Welcome back. It's a Monday, the 8th day of August, 2022. I'm your host, Mark Call, and I don't normally like to start off, or for that matter, even talk at all, about the idiocy that comes out of the Congress of the formerly free United States. It's a little bit like saying, dog chases cat. Hey, there's some news for you. But sometimes, even in a world gone nuts, the idiocy is just too precious to overlook. For example, a bill that comes out of the Senate named the Inflation Reduction Act, you know, is a stinking lie. In a land where health care is now about killing you and save the children means, oh yeah, so we can inject them with more crap. That is, if they survive even getting into the world. But what they're up to now should offend even sub-room temperature level IQs. They couldn't throw away a full $3.5 trillion, that's with a T, yet. Don't worry, they're still working up to it. But a $3/4 trillion so-called Inflation Reduction Act did get slammed through the Senate over the weekend. It's so asinine, you know, it's a lead pipe cinch to pass the communist house and then head over to the senile rubber stamp. It's a waste, it's a boondoggle, it's full of pork. As always, it'll do far more harm than good. But what makes this one even remotely unique? Listen to this pile of steaming excrement, courtesy of Axios via Zero Hedge. The bill includes just shy of $400 billion for so-called climate change. And if this doesn't cause you to almost lose your lunch, what will? It's the largest investment in clean energy. And that may be a Freudian slip, folks, but it's closer to the truth than what the text actually says here. In clean energy and emissions cuts that a febrile, gullible Senate has ever even tried to swallow. And drilling down on that idiocy proves that it's going to do far more harm than good. You know what, folks? Honestly, the Senate would be better off just printing the money and throwing it away than doing what they're intending to do with it when it comes to climate change. There are tax incentives to manufacture and purchase even more electric vehicles that will sit uncharged, generate more wind and solar energy that won't really generate as much energy over the useful lifetime of those devices as it will take to mine, refine, and manufacture them. And support fledgling technologies that ultimately will probably also do far more harm than good. Because if they were actually economically viable, folks, you know, they wouldn't need the subsidies. And instead, they'd be suppressing them. The bill also includes higher minimum taxes on any corporations that haven't yet decided to leave the country and go elsewhere, like even communist China, which seems freer by comparison nowadays. And here's one for the record books. With the possible exception of the FBI, pick a three-letter agency that's more Gestapo-like, more evil, more feared, and more anti-constitutional. How about the enforcement arm for the Federal Reserve? Oh yeah, guess what? They need more incentives for tax enforcement and showing the peons who is really boss, especially given what's coming. We got a whole lot more tyranny to push down people's throats, and they know they're going to need a lot more coercive power when people see this thing coming. But wait, there's more. You regular listeners are probably already saying, okay, that's bad, that's evil, that's the usual pork and wasting money and, of course, inflating the dollar to infinity and beyond. But really, what's new with that? Well, for that, and to really bring it home, we've got to do a bit of compare and contrast. Because the same people who brought you the Inflation Reduction Act, that's yet another part of guaranteeing that everything you have will be inflated into worthlessness, or, of course, just stolen outright in order to pay for your own destruction, have brought you this. A new report from the House Oversight Committee says that it's the bad booga booga gun makers who are using aggressive marketing tactics which emphasize masculinity as opposed to what? Cutting people's genitalia off and telling them they don't know what sex they were born? And make veiled references to white supremacist groups that, as it turns out, aren't white supremacist groups at all, like the Boogaloo Boys, in order to, say it with me, folks, sell guns. Quote, the business practices of these gun manufacturers are deeply disturbing, exploitative, and reckless, said Carolyn Maloney, the oath-breaking scumbag who chairs this communist house excuse for a committee. Listen to this and ask yourself if there was even a whit of truth in here. Who are they actually describing? The industry is both creating these customers and marketing to them, and therefore it's propagating more of this radicalization. Some of us can't help but think Big Pharma, who's really not only engaged in business practices that are deeply disturbing, exploitative, and reckless, but the people who are mandating that you take a poison poke that will destroy your immune system and keep you coming back for booster after booster till you croak outright. And guess what? They really have complete immunity for killing you in the process. If there was a single shred of truth, folks, in any of these house communist liars, whether we're talking about gun control or Moderna and Pfizer, ask yourself what would really be happening in the United States today if the so-called gun lobby was even 1/1000th of a percent as powerful as the Zyklon B pushers. You'd not only be forced to buy a gun every 6 months, you wouldn't be allowed to get on a plane or take a cruise without showing that you're packing. You'd lose your hospital job if you showed up in the OR without a sidearm. And Carolyn Maloney would certainly be telling you there's no such thing as death by gun violence. No, it's just a coincidence. You imagined it. And while all of that may sound funny, folks, here's the irony. You'd be a hell of a lot safer anywhere and everywhere you went, and far less likely to die from what your neighbor might be shedding. Because even the most idiotic gun banner cannot deny the following statement of truth. Nobody has ever died of a blood clot from putting a high-capacity magazine in their Glock. Now, at this point, I could move on, but it's important we deal with at least a couple more fallacies that might otherwise have slipped through here. As you know, when leftists want you dead, they lie about the figures. If there is a correlation or a causation between, say, taking a Zyklon B injection and then booster after booster to put that wooden stake in you, whether the result is dying quickly or over a longer term, from clots, myocarditis, pericarditis, cancers, well, you name it, and they won't, they've shown that they're willing to hide the truth, lie about the testing, and, of course, the effects. Same thing is true, and isn't this amazing, when it comes to gun control. Their proliferating gun-free killing zones can certainly be just as deadly, and sometimes just as fast. Whether you're talking Russian roulette, or the poison poke, or a gun-free killing zone, you might be able to get away with spinning the cylinder once or twice, or even four or five times, before eventually the number comes up. But ultimately, if you think about it, the end is almost always the same. And they're going to lie about all of those things. And we talked about that. If you've got eyes to see, you already knew it. But in these two stories are two additional lies that people might let slip through, like the Boogaloo Boys, which they claim is a far-right group, but as Zero Hedge points out, no, it's not far-right at all. And they even quote the Business Insider, hardly a right-wing publication, to make the point. Gunmakers like to point to the AK-47-style pistol produced by Palmetto State Armory, adorned with a pattern resembling the signature Hawaiian shirts worn by the Booga Booga Boogaloo Boys, and then claim that it's a far-right extremist group, except for inconvenient little facts. Like, the Boogaloo Boys really do support BLM, they do like wearing gay pride flags, and they don't like Donald Trump at all. And as they've also made very clear over time, they don't like the Proud Boys either. Kind of makes me wonder how they feel about senile communist puppets. Oh yeah, and that reminds me, there is this from the first piece about the next wooden stake the Senate wants to stick in America. As John Solomon puts it for JustTheNews.com, Bernie Sanders, the far-left presidential candidate who, by comparison, I guess, doesn't seem as nearly far-left as he once did, but he does at least openly admit he's a proud socialist, on Saturday, attacked the senile diapered-at-both-ends puppet and his so-called Inflation Reduction Act for failing to live up to its name. Get this. He said, quote, I want to take a moment to say a few words about the so-called Inflation Reduction Act. Then he said, I say so-called because, according to the CBO and other economic organizations that have studied this bill, it will, in fact, have a minimal impact on inflation, unquote. As if he would even remotely know, or for that matter, as if the CBO has ever really told the truth. The claim has to do with whether or not they can steal enough additional revenue in order to make up for the additional costs, without actually counting the real additional costs on the economy. You've heard the lies before, the revenue neutral BS. The trouble is, they ignore the real, and I'll say it, intended impacts. Like destroying the energy infrastructure and the ability of people to produce food. Little trivial stuff like that. Yeah, this is the traitors in the Senate openly wanting to spend another $750 billion to undermine what's left of the world economy. And we've reached the point when it comes to inflation that it's actually not about how much more fiat money they're going to print out of nothing. Will it in fact have a minimal impact on inflation? I guess, folks, it's all relative. Your host will put it this way. It's kind of like somebody coming up and throwing a 5-gallon gas can on a 5-alarm fire. It's not like the fire actually wasn't already out of control before some idiot came up and decided to commit additional Harry Carey. From there, I'm going to go to a few more stories that, admittedly, yep, we have done a whole lot like them of late, but maybe at the risk of being accused of piling on, these will help to at least open a few more eyes. The first one comes from the Burning Platform, courtesy of Steve Kirsch, and the title pretty well tells you, 14 young Canadian doctors, or at least they had, while they were still alive, a stethoscope and a white coat, have died after taking the Zyklon B injection. Normally, notes Kirsch, the number of such would be pretty much zero over about 3 decades. This is a list, he says, of the doctors my friend in Canada has heard about himself, and he notes that over the past 30 years, he's never heard of a single death like this one, not one, and now there are 14. The fact-checkers, at least those that haven't been banned yet from the fact-checking liars, assure us all of this is just a coincidence. The Canadian doctors, stupid unto death as they seem to be, continue to believe what they're told to believe. Well, that is if they want to stay doctors, not necessarily if they want to stay alive. And, says Kirsch, it's pretty easy to predict the next shots will be even worse. And sadly, he adds, I don't think the Canadian doctors are ever going to figure this out. Because they keep lining up to take a Zyklon B injection in order to, or so they say they believe, be protected from a disease which is easily treatable with a whole bunch of readily available, downright safe drugs with little or no side effects. And these just keep piling up. Remember, not long ago, there were 3 and then 6 recent deaths. According to Health Impact News, 6 Canadian medical doctors died within 2 weeks after taking their, count them, 1, 2, 3, 4th COVID booster shots. And that was at one hospital. And let's be really clear here, says Kirsch. You can't have 6 Canadian docs die within 2 weeks after taking the so-called vaccine if there isn't something very wrong with the shot. Period. Full stop. Each of these is a very rare event, but having them clustered like this is a sure sign that whatever's happening here, it ain't a coincidence. And he says, and I can't help but think he's understating the case, any honest scientist would begin with that hypothesis as the most obvious one and then reject it only if there was compelling evidence to the contrary. This, folks, if you remember Sherlock Holmes, is the dog that did not bark, in this case because it's been muzzled. Here's a real quick one, same topic, same basic point, from the Citizen Free Press that notes, yeah, as you've already heard, but the data just keeps on coming. U.S. life insurance companies are now seeing a 40% overall increase in deaths from all causes. There's a deadly statistical black swan for you. And there's this little tidbit. In terms of cancer patients, there's been a 300% increase over the past year, from about 36,000 new cancer patients to over 120,000 in America, with a K and now with a poke. And lest you think the deadly lies are limited to death by the COVID-1984 version of the Zyklon B injection, we have this today, courtesy of the Washington Free Beacon, which says, there's a new rule in the waystream media out there. Can you guess what it is? Don't say gay. Well, at least not when it comes to talking about the monkeypox, or the schlong COVID, as some are calling it. The word they note is conspicuously absent from media coverage of the booga, booga, booga latest. You're going to wear a mask and you're going to take a poke, even if there's no chance for you regular non-sexually anti-scriptural people to even remotely catch this stuff, because we're going to lie to you about it. The article is headlined by a picture live from CNN that says the White House is going to name a monkeypox coordinator as the number of cases rise. But what aren't they telling you? Yeah. Waystream journalists, it says, have adopted what critics are calling a don't say gay approach to covering the, well, to not covering, or at least whatever kind of coverage there is, of the monkeypox outbreak in the, yep, gay parts of the United States. The media's coverage of monkeypox, which officials in the gay capitals of New York and California have now declared a threat to public health because of rising case numbers, have studiously avoided using the word gay when discussing the, individuals who are without question far and away most at risk of contracting the venereal, the viral disease. Journalists insist on using the phrase men who have sex with men. The Bible calls it abomination, by the way, folks, and actually comes right out and warns clearly that death is a consequence of it. Decades-old terminology often used during the AIDS epidemic to describe the fact and explain why gay and bisexual men comprise about 98% of the more than 18,000 monkeypox cases worldwide. And some of us folks have actually wondered whether or not the other 2% are even consensual. Some left-wingers try to claim that even pointing this out is stigmatizing, and it probably makes you some kind of phobic. As if the idiots who use words like that even understood that fear had nothing to do with it. Even though there are a few out there who are saying this just might be particularly important information for gay men to know. All right, well, that's enough from the story, but I will ask one more question. In a world where people are still taking the booster shots to allegedly protect them from something that they know by now it doesn't, but it's in fact more likely to kill them 1,000 different ways instead, does anybody really think that the kind of people who are doing this are going to let facts interfere with their behavior anyway? Still, though, I guess you could make a case, given stories like this, that there may be some in the media who actually think that if they did report the truth, it might somehow make a difference, which is why they're not about to let that happen. Here's a piece that I saw reprised over the weekend. It came from Bill Kloss's law blog, and I guess I'm thankful because I actually missed it the first time around. It's about a COVID nurse who explains why she became a whistleblower. Quote, I recorded them murdering patients. The first day she said that I was at Elmhurst, I was shocked. It was something I'd never seen before. Patients were alone in the rooms on ventilators with no family allowed in to advocate for them. People were just dying from gross negligence, medical malpractice, mismanagement. Her name is Erin Maria Olchewski, and this is the whistleblower nurse who made headlines last year documenting, quote, fraud, negligence, and greed that led to unnecessary deaths during the peak of the COVID-1984 pandemic. She sat down with LifeSide News during the Health and Freedom Conference to share her experiences and reflections. A current Tampa resident and native of Wisconsin, Olchewski explained how she volunteered, at least temporarily, to work as a travel nurse in New York City. Telling LifeSite News' Rebecca Roberts that we, quote, weren't seeing a large influx of COVID-19 patients in Florida. She was also an Army combat veteran who served in Iraq between 2003 and 4 and mentions how she decided to enter another type of the frontline war zone by serving those in greater need at what she thought was the epicenter of the pandemic. And I use that word. She didn't, but I think she might now. She was surprised when she arrived to find out that she sat around for 3 days with nothing to do and learned that other nurses had been, quote, sitting around for 21 days or an entire month, getting paid $10,000 a week without any assignment. Quote, if they needed nurses so badly, why are you bringing me here if there's nurses sitting around, she asked, describing this as the first of several red flags that the reality of the situation in New York she was seeing developed was not what was being reported in the news media. And lucky me, she said with a smile and a touch of sarcasm, I did get assigned to Elmhurst Hospital in Queens, which ended up being the epicenter of the epicenter for at least reported COVID-19 fatalities. The very first day there, she said, I was shocked. It was something I'd never seen before. Whereupon she went on to describe patients alone in rooms on ventilators, no family allowed in, and so forth, calling it gross negligence, medical malpractice, and saying, for me, that was really difficult to swallow. Everything made sense to me, though, at that moment of why there were so many deaths in New York. She went back to her hotel room, had a good cry, and eventually contacted an attorney in New York to secure a pair of spy glasses in order to document what she saw actually going on in the hospital. Quote, I recorded them murdering patients. I recorded, she said, just the complete and absolute disregard for human life. And according to the video, Olchewski revealed how patients who repeatedly tested negative for COVID-19 were being described on their charts as COVID-confirmed, which triggered, of course, a higher compensation from government payouts. She contrasted what she saw in Florida to what was happening in New York, saying, there, we treated our patients with hydroxychloroquine, zinc, sent them home, and they were fine. But in New York, quote, they were banning alternative treatments like HCQ. The only thing they could do was to put people on ventilators, unquote. And hopefully you've heard these numbers, but they really do bear repeating, folks. At that time, the so-called Department of Health, Sick, and Human Services provided what were called perverse incentives instituted by Big Brother's COVID-19 relief funding, which awarded significantly more compensation to hospitals should patients manage to be classified as COVID-19 positive. That was worth 13 grand. Or, better still, if they got put on a death sentence, a ventilator. That was 39 grand. Olchewski indicated that these incentives dramatically impacted what was happening at her hospital, Elmhurst. You know, 13 grand to admit COVID-classified patients, and they were just admitting everybody. She further alleged that with that $39,000 incentive, the hospital would then put an admitted person, quote, on a ventilator that they knew would kill them, unquote. And in some cases, she added, there was an additional incentive of $10,000 for every death. With families kicked out and not being able to monitor, it was, quote, the perfect storm, and people took advantage of it. Reflecting on the lockdowns last year, she said they'd always been, quote, completely uncalled for. People stayed home and got even more sick, and that even caused more deaths. As most states sought to justify the lockdowns based on statistics coming out of, where else, New York, Olchesky admitted that the injustice of, quote, taking away people's freedoms based on New York numbers, well, now we know, were lies. Much of these high fatality rates, she added, came from the evil scumbag Andrew Cuomo, putting these actual COVID-19 patients into nursing homes and, quote, spreading the infection through members of the most vulnerable population. New York State nursing home deaths for that period topped 15,000, and after Cuomo's cover-up of the figures and his participation in mass murder, there were finally even calls from the socialist left for his resignation. Although, if you remember, folks, that really wasn't the reason. But it was the lockdown, she said, that caused even more harm than the virus, including things like emotional issues, depression, suicide, just the malhealth of everybody living on fear itself. That's no way to live. It's un-American to take away freedoms based on a false narrative. And with regards to advice, she emphasized people need to focus on their own health and natural methods. And this is still true, folks, as much now as it was then. No one's focusing on preventive health, she said, what you can do. Quercetin is a natural alternative to hydroxychloroquine. You can get it over the counter, take it with zinc, vitamin C, get outside and get good exercise. Be healthy, drink water, be brave, be bold, and step outside of your comfort zone. And by the way, folks, don't let anybody talk you into doing anything that amounts to suicide by lethal injection. Call that my personal opinion. And I guess on the how stupid do they really think Americans are front, we probably ought to wrap things up today with this one, because it's basically pretty tough to top. Came from early June this year, courtesy of John Rappaport via Lou Rockwell, and of course, the New York Times when it comes to the they really think you're stupid department. I'm loving this one, he begins. The Times has a new piece about the anti-vax movement, and he actually quotes it here. Let's see if we can stand to read it. The anti-vax movement's new frontier. A wave of parents has been radicalized by COVID-era misinformation to reject ordinary childhood immunizations with potentially lethal consequences, unquote. And say it with me, folks. Booga, booga, booga. And Friday morning, says Rappaport, they sent out an email blast to promote their propaganda article. And as Rappaport puts it, the Times really had to stretch to come up with a load like this one. And I'll skip over some of the really insulting stuff and just get to the insidious. In 2019, even before the pandemic, and they misspelled it, struck, the WHO, World Health Organization, listed growing vaccine hesitancy as one of its top 10 threats to global health. Now, the pandemic has given anti-vaccine advocates an opportunity to field test a variety of messages and find new recruits. Now, I love Rappaport's riposte to this one. He says, yep, our anti-vax squadrons use dozens of human and AI analysts to float our messages and then test the results. We use polls, surveys, in-home visits, NSA-type surveillance tools. We tap your cell phones, read your text, you know, and even covert assets in the press to expand our reach. Elite Foundation money, too, pours into our coffers. All right, I guess he's made the point. Back to the New York Times and their load of crap. There's a lot of misinformation about the COVID vaccines, and it just bleeds into everything. One doctor told us. These fake stories and bad information get stuck in people's heads, and they understandably get confused, unquote. And, oh yeah, really? One whole doctor told the Times that? Well, case closed. Verdict. We're guilty. The doctor is always right. Oops. Wait a minute, he says. I just called a doctor. He told me the Times doctor is wrong. Duel at dawn. Choice of weapons. All right, I'm going to skip some of the rest of this, but I think Rappaport pretty well nails it. Nowhere in the Times, though, ever will we read an actual debate on the subject of vaccines, or even not vaccines, in which two sides are adequately represented and allowed, even given ample space, to present a little thing called evidence. Well, or even fake evidence. Because any such debate would be demeaning for the gray lady, the arbiter of all things truth. It would signal, he says, a departure from their perch, which constantly advertises, if we say it, you'd better believe it, because we know it. I guess you could say what we really know, folks, is that their lips are still moving, and that almost everything that they're telling you not only is intended to be a lie, but arguably it's intended to lead to, well, the same thing Satan always comes for, death and destruction. And may Yahuwah bless you and yours.